You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the network, its advertisers, owners, or sponsors.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 37. Episode of 37. Thanks, Matt. That was really fast. Of securityjabber.com.
There's no bell.
There's no bell. Where's the bell?
Here's Bing.
The
bell.
No, here, only this is for you.
It's like there's a manual bell.
Yeah, manual. Oh, here. Here's a good bell.
I like my bells automated.
Here's your automated bell, Matt.
Yeah.
All right, so this is Security Jabber. This is episode 37, and got some cool guests for you tonight. This is Dave Glenn, your regular host and co-host.
Which is way better than being an irregular host.
Irregular, yeah, I know. Yeah. It's terrible when I'm irregular.
I'm Matt Thompson, your irregular host.
Yes, nice to meet you, Matt. We've regulars.
Chris Burrows.
Dan Gregory.
And we are joined tonight with special guests.
Reed Eastman with Black Sands.
And Tim Gallagher of Black Sands.
Also with Black Sands, we feel the need tonight to identify ourselves with more than just our names. Hmm. We're identifying ourselves by company and, stuff like that. So, guys, news of the weird tonight. I got a couple of things here. The former manager of the DoD Aerospace Threat Program says UFOs are real. Breaking news.
Dust is everybody on every blog.
Well, I mean, first of all, so we're saying we did land on the moon and UFOs are real?
Well, we didn't say the moon was real.
And the Earth is round, by the way.
No,
I just
on.
Heard that.
Come on, dude. The
I
Earth
know.
Is flat.
Dude, no, the Earth is
crazy.
Flat.
We only accept flat earthers on this show.
Mm-hmm. And plus, center Earth, you know. We got to get down there where the dinosaurs are.
Dinosaurs are at center Earth?
Oh, yeah, dude.
Hanging out because it's warm?
Along with those like weird guys from Land of the Lost.
Huh.
Big eyes. What are those things called?
Dinosaurs?
No, the weird the TV show, Land of the Lost. They had the
Skeksis?
Yeah, Skeksis.
Bill Lambier was a Skeksi.
Seriously?
Google it.
Bill Lambier was a Skeksi.
Interesting. Right. Was this a UFO flying saucer or...
He's just saying UFOs in general. So here's the thing. I mean, the headline obviously is true because sometimes you can't tell what's flying around in the air. That's unidentified. But this guy says that this is a 25 year veteran of the CIA's Directorate of Operations, Lockheed Martin Program Director for Advanced Systems, and a former Deputy Assistant of the Defense for Intelligence. So this organization is
fake news.
Yeah, fake. Yeah. No, this is not fake news, dude. It's for real.
Fake-ish.
So Luis Elizondo ran this program for the DOD. He's a senior intelligence officer, and he says that UFOs are real. So what do you guys think? I mean, what do you guys think about extraterrestrial life? You know, I think for a long time humans have been a little pretentious saying that we're the center of the universe. I mean, do you guys think there's real extraterrestrial UFO life out there? Can I have my tinfoil hat back?
I totally think there is. I mean, you just look at the numbers. I'm a numbers guy and numbers are my friends. So if you just look at the statistics, how many planets, how many universes, et cetera, and you extrapolate that out, even if 0.0001% or something ridiculous like that have life on them, then yeah, sure. Do I think we'll ever find it in my lifetime? Probably not. But I find it hard to believe we're the only sentient living things.
Sometimes I find it hard to believe that we are sentient living beings.
Mm-hmm. Me too. At least some of the people in this room.
We're a virus.
No, I totally believe it. There has to be aliens or some kind of intelligent being. The math shows it.
Yeah.
But also there's the problem of the speed of light. Because
that's a huge problem.
You know, because for us to be able to get a message to them or them to us, the closest, three-star galaxy with almost no planets is 4 years at the speed of light. The next one's 10 years. Yeah. So... you know, they are out there. The question is, will we ever communicate? Mm-hmm.
So I went to the Cranbrook Planetarium on Saturday night, and we were looking at the moon, which is really cool. But they have a solar telescope there, and they got like a 20-inch regular telescope, and they've got this other telescope, and the 20-inch wasn't up that night. But they had this telescope pointed at the moon, and it was really cool. But he was showing us pictures of, I think it was something like 5246 or something like that. 50 million light years away, he was able to get a picture of this galaxy.
Wow.
And it's kind of this side view of this galaxy, but it's actually pretty cool. So check out the Cranbrook planetarium when you get a chance there, or the observatory there. We got a tour by this guy, Hans, who I thought was some kind of professor. He's there. He's got a winter coat on, his tie, and a German accent. And he says, welcome to the observatory. Very nice to have you here. Anyway, wasn't a professor. He's an accountant that volunteers on the weekends.
You're going to go janitor.
It's the janitor. It's Carl. Yeah. It was Carl. Anyway, check out that planetarium. The universe is a big place, and it's kind of awe-inspiring to look at. And no matter what your political or spiritual bent, it's a big place, and it's kind of neat. And it's neat to think about what else.
I just saw a really cool video on YouTube, and essentially it was a talk about how time travel is real, and they demonstrate in a really easy way. Just to sum it up, basically, if we can travel at the speed of light, someone goes out 5 years and then comes back, it's going to have been 25 years that has passed here on Earth by the time they get back, and only 5 years for them.
There's a really cool – I'll post this in just a second. I'll post a video to this in just a second. There's a Facebook video out there right now of this guy. He puts a guy in a chair and he starts.
That's what
moving.
I'm talking about.
That talk. It's really interesting to watch. It's really interesting to watch how light. Why do you keep messing with me? Leave me alone. I'm in the mic now. Anyway, it's interesting. It's interesting to see how light. How you can actually prove our relationship with light in that simple experiment. So it's got a guy moving back and forth across the stage. They turn out he's got this light that he moves up and down. Right, it's up and down.
Yeah,
and
he's sitting on a chair as they're moving him parallel across the stage, and he's got a light that he's moving up and down in a completely dark room, and they show how his experience, how we're only at one fixed point in the universe, and how the time moves up and down, and essentially it goes across. I'm not smart enough to get all of it. But at the end of the day, I was like, time travel is real. That's awesome.
That's Einstein's theory of relativity right there. Exactly. That's awesome.
Yeah. Exactly. All right. What are we talking about today? Dan, is that you? Are we talking about hackers and stuff?
It is. Hello. It is.
Is this a security podcast?
I think so.
We must be talking about hackers then.
We like to think about it.
What happened over the weekend with one southern city that we all know and love?
Yeah, so City of Atlanta. Yeah. City of Atlanta was ransomed.
A little bit.
Along with their airport. Wi-Fi.
How many times does that make in the last 18 months that Atlanta's been taken out by a cyber attack?
I don't know, but a lot of local governments have been taken out by a cyber attack. So it's one of those things where they're saying that the essential services weren't affected, which is a great thing, because if 911 was down because of ransomware, there'd be some major problems.
Yeah, especially in Atlanta, right? That's bad.
So Chris, you recently came from the public sector. Talk a little bit about, why is it that we're having a hard time protecting our cities and our infrastructure and stuff like that? Like what's your conjecture about what happened in Atlanta?
Pretty much what happens with a lot of small, mid-sized businesses. They don't understand that it's important, and they're abiding by that. I'm so small, it's not going to happen to us. So, and I don't have the resources to tackle it. I've voiced my concerns, but the administration doesn't, needs to put the money somewhere. And we're going to ride it out until it happens to us. So that's probably what happened.
So it seems to me, as we look at some of these ransomware incidents, the hackers demanded $51,000 in Bitcoin. Like, is $51,000, is that some kind of a weird cap for the level of felony or something for extortion? $51,000, that's right. Like...
You hear that a lot, though.
It's only 5 Bitcoin. I mean, come on.
Makes me wonder if the bad guys just don't understand exchange rates.
Right.
They think it's a ridiculous amount of money.
Dude, 5 Bitcoin. Right. That's righteous. I think let's take down the city of Atlanta.
Right. It's like Austin Powers. $1 million.
Right. $51,000.
Wow.
But we saw this early on with ransomware attacks. As people are testing the waters, they want to see what someone can... The goal here is not to do anything more, well, at least on the surface, is to get money out. So if you ask for more money than they're willing to pay easily, then the attack really isn't suspect. It's not worthy of doing. So why don't they go back and say, why not $20,000? And then you pay them $20,000, and then they go ahead and they just re-trigger the ransomware, and they keep trying to do it. We talked about this a couple weeks ago on certain hospitals that are just setting aside slush funds essentially to pay ransomware attacks or to go out and say, listen, we have to have our records. We can't get everything in compliance, so we're setting aside cyber insurance. We're setting aside funds to pay the ransomware. I think this is one of those instances again where they're just asking for money, thinking City of Atlanta's got to have 50 grand.
And they want to get paid, mm-hmm. and then but they can't re-encrypt the data. They could technically, but that would kill their business,
mm-hmm.
right? So if they give the keys back, they know that other cities or whomever gets ransomed, then they can basically
easy for you to say
ransomed.
Yeah,
they can make some money.
That's psychotic.
Well, if Jason was here too, he'd say, "Well, after they pay the ransom, then we'll go ahead and we'll exfiltrate the data that we actually want, and then we'll hold you for extortion for all the IP that we pulled out."
I have to share an irony with you guys. It has nothing to do with the conversation at hand. I just got a pop-up that asked me to donate now to support my pop-up blocker.
Are you going to donate?
No.
I think you should.
Then it's going to keep
you should have sent me an email.
Right.
Yeah, it's going to go ahead.
How are you going to stop it?
And if my anti-spam doesn't get it, I'll pay that one.
You know what? The interesting thing is you said the $51,000 ransom.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if that is what the local person had the ability to sign out for the check.
Yeah.
Wow. So maybe they knew.
And so that then goes, well, maybe it was, you know, how targeted was
inside
that
inside job or at least someone that knows about the procurement mm-hmm. system.
They're trying to find the limit.
51,000, that's an odd number.
Right. But it could it really be is. That a local, you know, municipality person has the ability to authorize that kind of funding at the level where you could, you know, try to still keep it hush.
Not disclose it. Yeah. Right.
So did Atlanta pay? I didn't see the
catch it. They have paid. I think it's been shut down for 4 days.
Wow.
As of the story, it was still open. So,
wow.
Not 100% sure.
So at what point do we start holding people accountable for having poor systems in place?
Well, that's my question. Is if you're a taxpayer in Atlanta, and you're like, listen, because this is paying bills and court fees is the one, two things on here. Mm-hmm. If you hold me accountable and you give me a ticket, or you hold me accountable and make me pay my bills, and you use that money to then use taxes to have those systems, shouldn't they be covered? Shouldn't, you know, that's an expectation. If I pay you to have these systems in place, they have to be up and running. And if they're not, there has to be someone that has to pay for it.
Mm-hmm. So it looks to me as though, well, maybe not. I was going to say, it looks to me as though it's still going on, but I'm not sure. The Twitters have not told me yet.
The internet hasn't told you?
the interwebs have not shared it with me yet.
Well, and we've talked about before. Okay, sure. Say they pay the $51,000. That is a fraction of the cost that it's going to cost to really go in and do an IR on this and remediate and then clean up the systems and make sure that there's not stuff lingering in the back end. So
we all know that people make decisions based on FUD too. I sometimes wonder if sometimes people don't create these situations for themselves just because they can't get funding. Anyway, you know, that goes back to the age old conversation.
Still got the tinfoil hat on.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, it's age old conversation about wondering whether or not antivirus companies make viruses. So
right, and real life doctors make viruses and all that other stuff, right?
And that for sure.
And that.
All right. So conversation's been done on that. What do we got next, guys?
Dan's got some stuff about PKI.
Yes. And why it matters to you, what it means, and the fact that.
What does it all mean, Dan?
You use it every day. It's one of those silent little things that kind of runs in the background that manages and handles authentication, confidentiality, integrity of exchange of information and data, basically. So without a PKI, our lives become a lot more difficult and a lot less secure, that's for sure. So I'll kind of kick things off and get a little bit of a round table going on here. Is the role that PKI takes on is public key infrastructure, first of all. So
what does that mean?
Publicly available data that is exchanged, or a methodology, I'll call it, where if I wanted to exchange information with you, okay, and I'm a company and you're one of my customers, or I'm an individual wanting to trade information with you privately as another individual, a million different permutations of that, we could do this in a secure manner. Now, there's forms of encryption and everything that come into play here, but to kind of keep it at a high level at first, we both have keys to a central authority. Or a key or certificate authority, basically, where we both exchange information through that third party or a middleman, so to speak, and then we both exchange information in a secure way. I never know all of your information. You never know all of mine. So we have parts of the same key that open the same lock in the middle. Okay. And then once we open that lock to the same room, the information flows through that center space or the room, and then, you know, information goes from point A to point B. That's the best way I could come up with explaining a very, very complex topic.
So I'm glad that you explained it that way, Dan, because I have no idea. I still don't know what PKI does. And there's a really cool article from Medium.com that talks about PKI explained in 500 words or less really nicely. Tim's over there going, me. Let me talk.
All right.
Tim, explain
toss
PKI to us.
So there's a great video on explaining PKI with colors of paint. Okay. It's actually awesome because it sort of clicks on. If you have a color of paint and I have a color of paint, we don't know each other's color of paints. We then decide on a shared color. You mix your color with your paint. I mix my color with my paint. And then that homogenized gallop of different colors put together. You see, it's easier to make a color than abstract from and come back to the original colors. Mm-hmm. So let me get a better explanation. I could take something and encrypt it or make it hard to read, and only your key can decrypt it. So it's called PKI, public key infrastructure. I can have your public key, and it hurts nobody to have it. Everybody wants it, because if I want to encrypt something, I grab your key, encrypt it, and only you with your private key can decrypt it. Now, that's one thing it does. Now, PKI also does, verifies. It's called a signature. So I could take, let's say, the words "how now, brown cow," use my private key and what you call hashing of it, which gives me a little output that when I give you those two pieces of information, that statement and that hash, you can use my public key to verify that me, Tim, said "how now, brown cow." So it does two things. It encrypts or obfuscates or hides data, and then it also allows you to verify data without having to, you know, interact with the person that you're sending the information to.
Hmm. Cool. I like that. I like the analogy with paint. Just a couple of pullouts from this article they just tweeted out. PKI, public key infrastructure, is about how two entities learn to trust each other in order to exchange messages securely. And it's a shared secrets principle. You go to a central authority, you get authorized to communicate and act in a given network. So you have something, you know, again, your private key allows you to sign something and say, yes, this comes from me. Or other people can as Tim and Dan both mentioned, people can encrypt data so only you can open it because only you have your private key. I want to quickly highlight these five parts of certificate or web PKI. There are five parts of that. There's certificate authorities. These are the organizations that grant public keys, grant or revoke for public and private keys. There's a certificate authority that is a authority. It's that central location that says, yes, this person is who they are. Registration authorities issue certificates based on being trusted by that CA. Certificate databases store those requests for certificates. Certificate stores hold the certificates, and then key archival servers back up the certificate database in case of some kind of disaster. The pair of keys is generated with some kind of cryptographic algorithm. RSA is a common algorithm. ECDSA is a common algorithm. And then you have the ability to encrypt, using things like Pretty Good Privacy or GPG or SMIME. And it's kind of an interesting process. Take a look at the web explanation that we just tweeted out. I think that, you know, more and more as we talk about, web security and later on in this podcast, we're going to talk to the guys from Black Sands. This really kind of is a base principle in understanding how secure web communication works. So something to take a look at.
I like the explanation because something that we obviously use every day for email and web, and I'd really never thought of as colors of paint. Mm-hmm. I really like that analogy.
Can I just Soprano summed it up best. PKI.
I haven't watched it. Don't spoil it.
All right. Well, they'd always say, this is a friend of mine, or this is a friend of ours. So when you heard the phrase, this is a friend of ours, that guy was in the mob,
right?
And he was trustworthy. And so PKI is sort of that same thing. If that person over there trusts you and you trust that person over there, why can't you and I trust each other?
I like that. I like that analogy.
That's good stuff.
Yeah.
All right.
So in some huge news, in some huge news from last week, we had some people that that left different companies. So Google, Facebook, and Twitter, key executives decided that they were going to leave. So Alex Stamos, not any relation to John Stamos, but I heard he was a stand-in on whatever that show was. Gracious. Jesse.
Full House.
Full House, thanks.
Full House.
Gracious. So Alex Stamos from Facebook clashed with the company's leadership over Russian manipulation efforts and decided to leave the company. He's leaving in August. He said, my role changed. I'm currently spending more time in exploring emerging security risks and working on election security. A high-ranking security exec left Google, so Mikhail Zalewski, Director of Information Security at Google. He's been at Google since 2007. He's the second in command to Gerhard Eschelbeck. The Twitter CISO is leaving their company, Michael Coates. He said it had been announced internally for weeks. He's leaving to co-found a security startup. So all three of those departures come after the U.S. and EU authorities are cracking down on terrorist content, political propaganda, election meddling, and fake news. Mm-hmm. So what do you guys think about that? So Matt, you had some extra comments about Facebook.
I mean, Facebook, if you're connected to the internet, you know what's going on with Facebook. So Facebook has actually been scraping data from Android phones for a number of years, including things as deep as actually monitoring, you know, who you're calling, how long you're on the phone with them. And then that's coming on the back of just last week where Cambridge Analytica is being investigated by the FTC with their involvement possibly in taking about 50 million users' data and then scraping almost 30 million of those users, going really deep into their personal data and using them to be targeted during the presidential elections. What we take away from this is the market has had a knee-jerk reaction, 5% drop across the board for Facebook stocks in the last couple of days. That cost Zuckerberg $10 billion with a B.
$10 billion.
Should have gave a security jabber.
That's right. It's your fault, Mark.
And then overall,
we could have helped you.
They lost $75 billion on their top market cap. So, I mean, these are big things. I really don't think that all three of these giant social media security experts all exiting just before GDPR, which we're going to get into in the next segment, is any – I think they're getting out before the stuff hits the fan. They don't want to be the guy that has to clean up the mess. They're going to go do their own thing and go, yeah, that was in the past, and get out before things get real bad.
Think about the right to be forgotten in a network like Facebook or Twitter. How do you support the right to be forgotten? I mean, we're going to get to GDPR.
Well, your whole model is getting the information from the user, right, so you can exploit it.
You know, it's interesting.
Well, Facebook is free, isn't it?
Right,
you are the commodity.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Well,
Soylent Green.
To answer your question, these guys are getting out the perfect time because for the next 2 years are going to be nothing but government hearings. And so whoever takes over their position is just going to get beat on for those 2 years, and they're going to be paid to do that. Mm-hmm. And then they're going to bring on that next person, and they're going to tout, this guy is the guy for change, or this person's the person for change. So, you know, I guess update your resume because there's some high-level positions that your qualifications are just a smile.
Sabbatical.
Get right. Go get beat on. Go get beat on for a while, huh?
All right, Zuckerberg, I take it back. I'll let you know. I can take over. I can take
a
beating.
Are you available, Matt?
That's right. Yeah, I can take a beating.
That's right. Matt, you are now in charge of the Facebooks.
Come cheap.
Really?
Yeah. I'll only charge them like $25 million. What is that?
Perfect.
That's, yeah.
Mouse nuts. Yeah, so interesting. So, yeah, I put in that context, you have to wonder what other executives are going to leave, what other companies in terms of, you know, what's going on with GDPR right now. That is a crazy, and especially as mandates become more and more personally oriented, where we're requiring executives to sign privacy, affidavits and stuff like that. Who knows? Maybe that might be why the CISO from Oakland County left left Oakland County.
You never know what I'm hiding over there.
That's right. I mean, you look at it and you go, okay, well, these are social media people, but this is the first wave you're going to see. I'm going to go out and say people from LinkedIn, Microsoft, Yahoo, you know, hell, even the guy from AOL is probably going to get out of there. Just, you know, there's a few people using that. All these platforms, everybody's going to, they're going to start looking at it coming down the road because we've talked about GDPR. We're going to dive deep into GDPR next segment, but GDPR taking place over in Europe is the first step. There's already a number of states. There's already a number of countries that are starting to take on the GDPR framework. And I think in the U.S., on the back of everything that we saw with Equifax and some of the other stuff, it's right in the front minds of a ton of people. This Facebook thing is going to be huge. We've heard I'm going to quit Facebook. I'm actually seeing people drop off my Facebook. My friends are dropping off Facebook because they're really, really mad that their data was getting scraped on their Android phones. And not just the normal stuff like, hey, this is who I talked to. Hey, I called Karen at this time on this date and then this date and this date. And you can download all that data. There's a lot of stuff that you can pull out of there.
True. But you have to look at the election thing. It was easy to sway because the target audience for that are the people when they go out of a checkout line and they read the Inquirer and it says, you know, a baby of Jesus comes back with the head of an alligator, and they have to stop for about 8 seconds and ponder that. That is the swing vote that they're looking for, that these analytic people are mining, because what they did was they actually created a false environment so that you would weave down by clicking on this one thing and then this next thing that would entice you. And they actually built sort of rabbit holes for these people of clicks so these people could fall down to now start getting the propaganda. And that is, and they couldn't get away from it because every click was a little bit more enticing, a little bit juicier, a little bit something else to either be mad about or to work for. So, you know, that data is hard to secure because it's not really, what was the phone call? It was, what were you doing at this time of day, and how can I capture your attention at that time of day?
Well, I think they're two separate. I think the stuff that Cambridge Analytica did was take advantage of some maybe poorly written policies by Facebook and some APIs. That stuff is going to come out. The Android stuff, it just wasn't transparent on how much data they were scraping. And to your point, the rabbit hole that goes down, I actually know a ton of people that got stuck in a bubble. And the problem with the Facebook algorithms is that once you start going into this bubble, you just fed into this bubble. And my contention is not that the Russians influenced the election. The Russians influenced divisiveness in the United States. And they've done it in other countries, and they've continued to do it, and it's been unchecked. And you continue to see that they're pushing basically, democracy's their goal is to get rid of democracy. It's get rid of democracy and make everybody go left, make everybody go right, because they win in the end. Because if we're not unified, then that's more like Russia. So, right. Not to dive too much into political stuff, but
what do the Russians have to do with anything?
Sorry, poke.
I feel like it's like the 80s all over again, man. We're like wearing crazy stuff. The Russians are back.
I just heard if the Russians love their children. What was that song? How can I save my little boy from Oppenheimer's Dudley toys? Anyway.
Oh, no? You lost me there. You went to a place I can't follow, man.
Oh, I'm sorry. No,
sorry. I don't doubt you.
Come on, when you have candy.
Yeah, wow.
Do you have candy? Do you have the Moscow Mules?
Wow. Yes, as a matter
we
of
like
fact.
Them.
As a
matter yeah, we'll fact, keep yeah. those.
Yeah.
So, guys, that was an interesting segment on hackers attacking city computers, public key infrastructure, and the Facebooks, people leaving, executives leaving. It's an interesting time to be alive, interesting time to be in this cybersecurity industry. Next segment, we're going to talk about GDPR and really dig in. It's coming in May, and as they say, winter is coming, GDPR is coming. Matt, where do you find us?
You can find us on securityjabber.com.
.com.
Yeah, and then also on Twitter, securityjabber.
What about Zuckerberg? Can he find us anywhere?
Well, let's see if we can entice him. He's poorer now.
Hey,
so.
Mark.
Yeah. Right, $5. Give us security, Facebook / SecJabber is where you can find us. We'll see if we can get Zuckerberg to turn around and we can become Security Jabber.
Maybe if we misspelled security, maybe if we spelled it security or something.
Jabbers?
With a D.
Security.
Security. Security Jabber. All right, guys, thanks for tuning in. We will be back in another segment to talk about stuff in a minute. Wait, next segment in another episode.
No, next segment.
Next segment.
Yeah, segment two.
Segment two.
After one.
After one.
Because
does that
math.
Come next? Mass plus one.
Math.
Thanks.